Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf Thomas Trantz here with you. Coming to you live from the Kintech studio. You can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Just the best royalty-free Irish music we can find on St. Patrick's Day. Dom came in and he got mad at each and every one of us for not wearing green. Throw out Dimitri's wearing green. Dimitri Filipovich, host of the PDO cast, joins us in studio now. Did you have a green scarf too, Drance? Was that intentional?
I do have a green scarf. No, it wasn't intentional.
Oh, okay. You lucked into it. Just like me, I'm wearing green shoes.
I couldn't find
today.
My red one.
Right.
It's not even scarf weather today.
Yeah.
Well, it's a light scarf. It's for the look.
It's an accessory.
Yeah. It's, I don't light it.
So St. Patrick's Day. More importantly, though, Lena's birthday. Producer Lena.
Happy birthday, Lena. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Lena. Not here. Working from home. Anyway, we'll move on. Dimitri Filipovich, do we start with Utah?
Yeah, let's do
last
it.
Night.
Oh, you don't have to convince me and Tom.
I know you guys love Utah. So they beat the Canucks last night. They lose to Seattle on Friday, mm-hmm. but I was watching that game. I assume you guys watched that game as well. And Kaapo Kakko, he scores the game-winning goal. It was kind of a fluky bounce by off of Mikhail Sergachev, hit the net. Kakko scores. And then for 10 minutes, it was Utah with relentless pressure and Philip Grubauer just being like, you know what? You're not going to win this game. But Utah looks really good.
Yeah, an out-of-body experience for Philip Grubauer. Not too many of those performances over the past couple years.
No.
I thought it was an impressive win from them in Vancouver on Sunday just from the perspective of they're playing well in the first period, outshooting the Canucks, which obviously isn't that hard of a feat these days. But the Canucks score that goal to go up 1-0, and you think, all right, this is a horrible game script for Utah. They've lost so many of these close games.
Yeah, it's going to be 30 shots to 12, but the Canucks win 3-1. Yeah. That's how I felt.
They managed to come back. They score the goals, obviously, wind up winning it 3-1. And just, I think, not only the road win, but getting a close victory, which has been so few and far between for them this season, was a big feat for them. Right back in it, 2 points out now. It's getting incredibly tight with the Blues winning last night as well. And so, yeah, we're shaping up for a heck of a sprint towards the finish line here.
St. Louis, easiest strength of schedule remaining in the NHL, especially their next little run, is
the opposite of the Canucks schedule.
Absolutely cake. The Canucks schedule is more difficult, you think, because they have St. Louis and
Winnipeg? They have a 6-game road trip and remarkable Jets team in their next game. So.
And through Columbus.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the New York teams and Columbus. Right? So that's pretty tricky. I mean, I think Columbus is a really tough matchup for the Canucks, especially if they don't have Hedl.
Well, pretty much every one of the opponents in that slate as well is playing for something.
Right.
At this point of the season, right? Whereas you look at the Blues one in 3 games stacked together in close succession against the Predators, a game against the Blackhawks there as well. The 2 tough games they play against the Canucks and the Canadiens are both at home. The final game of the season could potentially be for the final spot between Utah and St. Louis in St. Louis as well. So
yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah, you got to...
Canucks fans will hope it isn't, but that could be fun.
So before that, though, the Canucks take on the Jets tomorrow. I've noticed that you're a big Dylan Samberg guy.
Oh, yeah. How could you not be? I mean, he's been awesome all season. All of his underlying metrics have been through the roof, really stabilized that second pair, been a big part of Neil Pionk's individual resurgence this year after a poor year last year. Now Pionk's out week to week. They bring in a familiar face, Luke Shen, and all of a sudden he steps in on the second pair. And Samberg's opened his game up these past couple games. He scored the overtime winner in Seattle last night. Scored against Dallas in the game prior. It feels like without Pionk there, he's assuming a bit more of an offensive role. And I think if this continues, he's going to become a very mainstream name, not just for the diehards, because the counting stats are going to come along for the ride as well. And I think he's been a big part of Winnipeg's success, and they just keep rattling off win after win.
Maybe it's because they burned me before, but I can just never fully trust the Jets. Is this year different? Is there a reason to believe in them more this year compared to previous ones?
I think so. First off, they're going to have home ice throughout. I know they had home ice in the series last year against Colorado, but you look at their path ahead and they're going to get whoever wins this turtle race in the wildcard 2 spot in the West in round 1. So that'll allow them to, I think, shed some of those demons, get a series victory under their belts, head into a round 2 matchup against either Dallas or Colorado with home ice, feeling good about themselves. It's a better team than last year. Not only Sandberg's emergence, but Perfetti as well, who, if you recall, Our pal Rick Bonus was healthy scratching for the majority of that series against the Avs last year, and now he's playing a prominent role in the second line. So they're just such a well-oiled machine. You watch their game on Friday night against Dallas, and it was a sellout crowd in Winnipeg. It was an electric atmosphere. They played remarkably well, and so this year it does feel different, in my opinion.
It's March Madness starting shortly. I guess the first four starts on the 20th. Not that I'm keeping track. So let's size it up. I want you to give me like a 3-sentence bull case and bear case for each of the four Stryver class teams in this Western race, beginning with the Calgary Flames.
Well, the bear case is pretty easy. I think since February 1st, all of their metrics have absolutely crumbled.
Yep.
It's been entirely Dustin Wolf carrying them. So the bull case is Dustin Wolf,
mm-hmm.
who I think is going to get legitimate Vezina votes, not only for the Calder, but I think he's going to be top five in the Vezina as well. And that gives them a chance every single night. The bear is that they are 32nd in scoring, and all of their metrics at 5-on-5 have fallen off a cliff. So I think that one's pretty easy. Utah's, their bear case is they keep losing one goal games. They take a ton of penalties. They're making a lot of the sort of characteristic mistakes of a young team that hasn't really been here before. The bull case is they're clearly the best team out of these four. Every single underlying metric suggests they're a top 5-10, 5-on-5 team with a top 10 power play and a good goalie in Kirill Vemelka. So I think there's a lot to like there. The Blues, the bull case is that since Jim Montgomery took over, they're playing much better. Their defensive metrics have all significantly improved. Bear case is that I'm not sure they're very good. I still have a lot of questions about the ceiling of that team and just the general talent. And maybe I'm holding too much of like my future evaluation of them in terms of where they're headed in the years to come against them, because it doesn't really matter for the rest of this season, but I'm still skeptical of them. And do we have to do the Canucks bear versus bull? Because I'm not really sure what the bull case would be, other than obviously Quinn Hughes playing 29 minutes in a game and just carrying the team and that being enough and getting early leads and holding on defensively.
Yeah, defense and PK. Right, I think that's it.
Last night was their 30th game this season. How many have they played? Like 66 or 67 or so?
Something in there. 67.
Their 30th game under 25 shots. And their 9th game, I believe, under 20. Like, it's just really hard to believe that that's going to be good enough
so
to win out.
We had a text in, and I'm curious to get your take on it, because I thought it was an interesting one. And so basically it was, the idea was about Jacques Lemaire.
Okay.
Okay.
Every great text starts with Jacques Lemaire.
Yeah, I responded to it too. I want to find it. Effectively, the suggestion was that, so I'd made this point that the Canucks weren't playing attractive hockey or high-quality hockey, and their point was that it doesn't really matter. There's a difference between quality hockey and winning hockey. And I sort of responded to them, the Canucks, to me, are a 2-1 team in a 4-3 league. Like, have we crossed the threshold where you can win playing sort of shell defensive hockey, given the way the league is trending, the skill level, the fact that shooters have finally begun to rest some of the advantage that goalies accrued over 25 years post Patrick Roy?
I think if everything goes your way the way it did last year for this team, I think you can. I think come the postseason, though, I know it's a bit counterintuitive because everyone thinks of playoff hockey as really slowing down, harder to score goals, it becomes more physical, and defense wins. But I think you do need to clear a certain threshold if you're going to be serious about advancing in the postseason, because if you're struggling to create goals now in the regular season against inferior teams with less preparation time for you, come the postseason, it's just going to be almost impossible for you to score enough. And so I don't think playing this way in the regular season is necessarily a good preparation for the playoffs. I'd argue with that first point you made, though, like the NHL is an entertainment product, right? And I guess, like, ultimately, if you're invested in this team, you're diehard, you've been cheering for them for your entire life, you want to see them win, certainly. But I don't know how you could be like excited right now going to the rink being like, oh, I'm going to get to watch the Vancouver Canucks play today. They're going to get 17 shots on goal and hopefully score twice. Like, I don't, that's not something necessarily that I think resonates with a lot of people. And whatever wins they accrue here, even if they do make the playoffs, it's heading towards a pretty lopsided round one series against Winnipeg. And I think that's going to be a tough thing to get excited about too.
And I just think, even going back to last season, like, people would show up excited and the Canucks weren't necessarily scoring a lot of goals, especially late in the year,
right.
But they at least had the potential, like, you know what? They have JT Miller, they have Elias Pettersson, they have Elias Lindholm, they have all these guys who you at least felt fine about the forward depth being able to go out and score a decent amount on a given night. Now you go into a game and it's like, oh, I hope Pettersson is back. I hope Quinn Hughes can do something, and then maybe they score twice. So it's tough to you need a counterpunch, and they don't have a counterpunch.
Well, also last year I think it's a very easy team to get behind when it's like one that enters as an underdog and then exceeds expectations and everything goes right and you're just enjoying the ride and you're like, man, this is so much better than I expected. This year has been the opposite in that way, and so I think that perspective as well of like what your expectations were and then how the team meets them clouds this quite a bit too. So I don't know, like, this year's obviously been a disappointment for a number of reasons, but I think the entertainment value itself is an entirely different conversation.
So the Canucks, they play St. Louis on Thursday. We talked about that. Then they're in New York for the JT Miller rematch on Saturday. The Rangers, they beat the Blue Jackets 4-0 on Saturday. Lost last night to Edmonton, though. What are the Rangers?
Yeah, they've been playing, I mean, at least from a results perspective, they've been playing much better lately. I think they've found some sort of a temporary solution, putting Mika Zibanejad on JT Miller's wing, freeing him up a little bit. He's been more productive since the Four Nations break. The goaltending has been incredible. Igor Shesterkin and then Jonathan Quick, when he's been called upon, have given them a chance to win every night. I still think, though, there's so many gaps on that roster, the playing style as well. They're hanging around here. I feel like with that goaltending and opportunistic scoring, especially on the power play, they could make it just because there's enough question marks for the other teams involved in the Eastern Conference race. But clearly a flawed team that I think could be exposed on any given night.
Also, Montreal, if we go by point percentage right now, is the team in the second wild card spot. Are they for real?
I think they're like 7-2-1 or something since the Four Nations break.
Yeah, 7-1-2 in their last 10.
Yep. The top line, which we saw here in Vancouver when they visited last week, has been absolutely on fire. Caulfield, Suzuki, and Slavkovsky have been carrying them. Yeah, it's a great story. I mean, certainly significantly improved from last year, even from the first 25 or so games of this year. I still feel like it's probably a year too early from them. From the perspective of comparing them to the other teams that are in this race. But as you said, they've been playing so well lately. There's not that much season left and they're currently sitting in a spot. So I think you have to take them very seriously.
With where the Canucks are positioned, right? Where we're looking at this top six and I think pretty concerned, not just about whether they have enough juice for this season, but sort of how you flesh it out next year. Like, right. This team is built now a blue line that I think we like is, you know, honestly, probably very good. But what does it support in terms of, like, this team might be able to set the table, but can they eat it all, right? Like, what's the use of a feast hall adorned with deliciousness if no one has an appetite, right? How much would it take in your mind for this Canucks team over the course of this summer to get enough juice onto this roster to, you know, at least have a puncher's chance against your Edmonton and Vegas tier teams in the Pacific?
I think the bigger question is the willingness to actually use whatever talent you brought in, right? I just did a show on my podcast with Jack Hahn, who puts out his hockey tactics books, and he had the Canucks as the poster child of glass and out for their style exiting their zone. And so for a team that's averaging even fewer rush chances than they did last year, just hovering barely over 5 per game, regardless of whatever talent you brought in, if they keep playing this way, you probably wouldn't see them succeed or get the most out of them or carry over whatever success they had on a previous team. So I think that's like a bigger elephant in the room or something you'd have to answer. How much of it is personnel driven, and they're obviously lacking talent right now, but how much of it is a willingness to actually change the way they play dramatically and embrace whatever that talent could bring to the table?
Trance, did you have any more on the Canucks before we...
You want to draft something?
We could draft something, or I did want to ask about Stars Avs yesterday.
Yeah, no, let's talk Stars Avs.
Stars Avs. Great game yesterday, playoff preview. It kind of had everything you wanted, too. Mikko Rantanen getting a point early, Martin Hs scoring a goal early, too, and then a comeback from the Stars that ultimately ends in a Cale Makar overtime goal to win it. How excited are you for that first round series that we're probably going to get?
Yeah, really excited, especially if both teams are at full health, right? It sounds like Gabe Landeskog is practicing with the team right now. It's trending up that he'll be available, or at least legitimately
going on the road with the
comeback.
Team too.
Yes. So it feels like that's kind of turned a corner from where it's been in previous return attempts. Miro Heiskanen will hopefully be back for the Stars as well, and that's going to make as big of an impact as you could possibly imagine, because all of a sudden you're playing him 25 minutes as opposed to leaning on guys like Labushkin and CC and Matt Dumba in premium roles. So at full health, that's a Western Conference final caliber matchup that we're going to be treated to in round one. And we might also get Florida-Tampa Bay in round one as well, which I could say the same about as an Eastern Conference version of it. So I know people get frustrated about the playoff format in the NHL and how we're getting some of these matchups sooner than they really deserve to be played. At the same time, though, the playoffs are such a war of attrition, and by the time you get to the conference finals, there's injuries and guys aren't really playing at their full capabilities. So seeing like the fully formed, healthy versions of these teams in round one would, I think, be incredibly entertaining.
It would be great if there's a world where we get Battle of Florida, Battle of Ontario,
yes,
Dallas and Colorado. Like, if there's a world where everything goes right. And that's the one I want to live in.
Yeah, that would be a fun one.
Coming back to that game, I know the Stars managed to fight back, just like they managed to almost fight back against the Edmonton Oilers a little while ago. I thought the way that the Avs took control of that game in the second period honestly concerned me from Dallas's perspective, if that's going to be a playoff series. I think the Avs just might have a higher gear, all told.
I mean, all three of the games, not including the one they played here in Vancouver, but the three other games the Stars have played previously in Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Colorado against legitimate cup contenders, they got significantly exposed defensively, were struggling, hanging on for dear life. There was so much space in the neutral zone for those opposing teams to attack them. And yeah, we've talked about how we don't know why Jim Neal assembled his defensive core the way that it did. If Heiskanen comes back and steps in, I think it makes everything
a
more palatable, certainly,
And
gives them more options. But for the time being, it's going to be a nightmare regardless of who they play, because they're going to have to outscore all their problems. So it'll be fun to watch, and we saw they're certainly capable of putting up crooked numbers on the scoreboard themselves, and I think that's going to make for great theater. But they're very, very vulnerable right now.
Yeah. Yeah. If Heiskanen's not Heiskanen, I think they're... I don't want to say something like paper tiger, but I find it difficult to imagine them emerging from the Central, given that Colorado and Winnipeg will be in their path. Like, I just don't think they're at the same level as those two teams right now. And I don't know if Colorado is either. We're sort of just getting to know what this Avs team is. We haven't seen them play enough. But that east-west movement that they were managing shift after shift against the Stars looked like almost nothing else in hockey. You know, like in a really, really fun way. They were playing bandy out there or something.
And way more sustained, because it used to be, you'd see that from the first line, but then when they get off, you'd be like, all right, we have like a minute and a half.
Yeah, now it's Malinsky quarterbacking.
And all of a sudden now, like, it just keeps going. They bring out Nichushkin and Brock Nelson with Drouin. They bring out Coyle and Colton on the third line. Like, they can come at you in waves, and it's a nightmare, especially at altitude. Like, the Stars aren't going to be alone in terms of holding on for dear life and white knuckling like that. But yeah, they put that on full display on Sunday.
Yeah, it's fun. It's kind of like the old Ty Lawson Nuggets that played the highest pace in the NBA, right? So you'd go to altitude and just get run off the court by this like fast break team. Like, it's cool that the Avalanche have leaned into that for hockey too. I like that.
Yes.
Ty Lawson.
That was on the forefront
baby.
Of everyone's mind.
The
Ty Lawson Nuggets. That's right.
Yeah. The Ty Lawson Nuggets.
Wearing a Nuggets hat too? Wow.
Let's go.
Look at you go.
I'm mostly just excited about UNC. in the first four, right? Everybody else?
Yeah.
Filling out their brackets?
Well, this might just be you.
No, come on. Millions of brackets will be filled up. Anyway, all right. Should we draft something quick or no?
Sure. Did you have something in mind?
I don't have anything in mind.
All right.
You know, we drafted on Friday. We drafted days of the week, and it led to raucous debate.
I heard the discourse because it came into the prep room after, and I was like, what's going on? Anyway, Sunday is the first day of the week.
Are you high?
Sunday is the first day of the week. I look at a calendar. Sunday is the first day of the week.
You can adjust
Thomas
that in the
strongly
settings.
Disagree.
I strongly disagree.
I'm aware. I'm Team Jamie on this one.
One of the listeners emailed into the box and said this was the first time I've ever agreed with Rance. So we should point that out.
Monday. That's why people don't like Mondays. It's the first day of the week.
First day of the work week.
I think people don't like Mondays because of Garfield propaganda. Anyway.
You know who thinks Sundays are the first day of the week?
Who?
Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah, exactly right. This is right. It's just kowtowing to the church. All right, let's draft. Okay, ready? Let's draft pending unrestricted free agent wingers that you want to see the Canucks
Mitch
sign
Marner,
this
one.
Summer at cost.
Jeez.
And you have to give the cost.
We do not have enough time.
Say Mitch. Yeah. Say Mitch Marner.
All right, Tim, you go first.
What?
You got this.
At cost?
At cost. Just make up the cost.
Oh, man. Well, I feel like the only one that I really... No, they're not going to go Ehlers route. You know what? Kyle Palmieri.
Okay. At what cost?
Oh, man.
It's got to be six.
All right, I'm out. I removed my Kyle Palmieri pick.
It immediately got bad.
I'm not giving Kyle Palmieri $6 million, but he does feel like he would be a Vancouver Canucks type winger that comes in and has a 17% shooting season next year and scores 35 goals.
And then everyone gets excited and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not wrong. All right.
The market's ugly this year.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
Palmieri.
I'm going to go Nick Ehlers.
Okay.
At like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I'm going to go Mitch Marner and I'll go with...
Whoa. Give cost, buddy. You made up the rules.
Mitch Marner's $13 million. Flat out. Not even hesitating.
Maybe even more because the Blackhawks will probably get involved.
100%. Yeah. So I'm not even hesitating, though, whatever it costs. Fire all weapons. Get Mitch Marner. I'm fine with it. And then if you have to subtract from elsewhere, so be it. And then my second pick, I'm going to go with...
Oh, man. How much would Rick Tocchet love Joel Armia?
I know. I was thinking about it. I'm going to go with Alex Iafallo, though. Because he can at least score.
Yeah.
Is it back to me?
And he'll be like $3 million. Yeah.
I'll go Brock Besser.
Oh, nice. That's like a good value.
7 to 8.
Good value. Dim, finish. Take us home.
I got to go Joel Armia. It's the most realistic. I can already see it. Start printing the jerseys.
Canucks Armia?
Yeah.
Oh, no. We can't do that. Anyway, thank you, Dimitri, for popping in on a Monday. Have a good week. We'll be back on the other side. Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Strand, Sportsnet 650. Feel a sense of like impending doom with this song. I like it, but it feels like something's coming when I hear it.
Did you see the girl at the Canucks game that like legitimately just broke out into a jig and won the Air Canada like aeroplan
like an Irish
prize?
Jig? Was it?
Yeah, so it was like dance of the game, and it's like kids waving foam fingers and stuff, and then this girl's legitimately doing like river dance in the aisle. And obviously everyone goes nuts and she wins. And her boyfriend looked so proud. And I was like, no kidding. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Go out, lay it on the line if you're going to be on cam.
Legit, the best performance
of the night.
from someone affiliated with Vancouver, other than Alex Kerfoot on the PK on the night.
You were in the with the regular people yesterday.
The regular people,
the regular
hey, Dom?
Folks.
Wow.
The normies.
Patrician Dom. Like,
not your ivory tower
dude,
in the
did
press
you,
box.
Did you, where's the, do we have like a spit drop? Like a, you were with the regular people.
You were with the regular folks. In the president's.
Dom would never.
I like to say I was with the civilians, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. What is your move if you were ever to be shown on the Jumbotron? Are you Mr. Ignore the Jumbotron? Are you like,
oh, hey,
it's Thomas Trant.
I would get booed, so.
Could you imagine?
No one would recognize me. It's fine. I don't know. I'd just like be chill?
Like, if you were on the dance cam yesterday, would you just be like, no?
No.
Or you do a little
shake.
Yeah,
you do a little shake and you, like, wave.
And then they don't come back to you.
Exactly.
You gotta.
Especially because I was there with my nephew, who would have, like, loved to be on the Jumbotron.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I would have just, like, done the old, like, look, we're up there. We're up there. And then you wave, and then you just, like, be happy for a sec, and then the camera leaves, and you're like, oh, not enough offense.
Is there no kind of worse feeling than when you're with someone, and you know you're on the Jumbotron, and then there's that, like, 4-second period where you're trying to tell them that you're on the Jumbotron, and then they look up at the Jumbotron, and by the time they realize, they cut away?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
It's a tough look.
I feel like the operator does it on purpose.
Oh, I would. I'd be just ruthless.
The second they look up, switch.
And never go back.
Yeah.
It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz. You could text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Speaking of you being at the game, I did want to hit. There were a number of texts talking about your Utah fandom or pushing Utah fandom onto you, essentially, including this one from Chris and Duncan. Is Drantz wearing a sleeveless shirt today to show off his Utah HC tats? No, he is not. He's keeping them hidden away from
UNC tats?
Utah HC hats.
Oh. I mean,
do you have UNC hats? Tats too?
No, I'm not into UNC, and I'm neutral. I don't like the Utah Hockey Club because I like the Utah Hockey Club. I think they play good hockey. I like the way that they use their speed to defend, and I think they're good. I picked them very early in the year as a team with the sort of profile to get hot down the stretch and upset the apple cart in what was widely assumed to be a relatively fixed Western Conference playoff mix. Now, the Canucks have slowed down to such an extent that Utah is still kind of in the race despite underperforming what I thought they could do. They've got some issues, like Vejmelka's started 10 games in a row now, and Connor Ingram, who's in the PA program, I mean, he's not exactly coming through that door. So at some point, they're going to need to find some rest for Vejmelka, and that's going to be problematic for them. They don't have a third goaltender who you really, really trust. Not too different from the Canucks starting Shelovs against the Blackhawks and looking poor. I mean, I guess one thing is we haven't really touched on the Blackhawks game.
No, yeah, so Canucks win. They won 6-2.
They scored a lot.
Remember, 2 days ago. That was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I thought Shelovs looked poor in that game, to be totally honest with you.
He was a very unconfident goalie.
Yeah. Yeah, including the puck over glass.
Yeah.
At when the game was still 2-0. You know, the only drama going into the third was, will Shelovs give up a softie that hurts them? And he did, but the game was already in hand by that point. That Blackhawks team, what a miserable experience.
Okay. That might be the worst. Maybe it's not the worst because I saw San Jose play last year. But that might be one of the worst NHL teams I've ever seen play. And even Connor Bedard, who, look, I think he's fully going to work out, be a superstar at some point in his NHL career. He had a really tough night, too. And I can't blame him. He doesn't have a lot of help. And he seems like a prideful guy that is probably very, very frustrated with how this season has gone and how last season went, the culmination of everything. Like, he hasn't been able to, on an individual level, probably play where he wants to as well. But you also compare it to the Blackhawks played in San Jose before they played in Vancouver. And the vibes of San Jose, despite being a worse team and kind of being in a similar spot with Celebrini and all that, the vibes in San Jose are wonderful. Like, it seems like a fun team to play for. Obviously, they're bad, but Celebrini and Smith are both very good. Tyler Toffoli is bringing the type of veteran leadership that I think is much needed in Chicago. I don't know. I would be very frustrated if I were Connor Bedard. And I think Chicago, Kyle Davidson, and what they're doing this offseason, I need to see a lot more from them a lot sooner than it seems like they're Like their window seems much further away than a team like San Jose to me.
Yes and no. I mean, the problem that the Blackhawks have is just a massive lack of NHL talent, whereas the San Jose Sharks still have some ghosts of going for it past that they have to clear, right? Like Vlasic has another year. Couture has another 2 years. Burns is retained salary, comes off the books this year, but they still have Tomáš Hertl forever. And they have someone else, Erik Karlsson, for two more seasons beyond this year. So they're a ways away from being like structurally able to max spend. Granted, that, I guess, disadvantage will diminish here. I think the major difference is guys like Eklund are real NHL players and like good ones.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas the Blackhawks and they also have guys like Wennberg who are at least have some creative juice. But, you know, the truth is that the Sharks have lost, more games than the Blackhawks, right?
The Sharks are lower in the standings.
Yeah, yes, so, and while you like what Will Smith's, like, the progress that Will Smith has made this season, and obviously Celebrini is the truth, I think one thing that Celebrini is ahead of Bedard on right now, and I think it's a major reason why we're talking so differently about them, not just the vibes that Mike Greer and David Warsofsky have created relative to what you're seeing in Chicago, but I think Celebrini is better calibrated to win battles right now, like point of attack, and then quickly counterattack and pounce off of them. Whereas Bedard, I think, is struggling to do that. I think, you know, he's not quite as big as Celebrini. I think Celebrini is a little bit faster, and I think Celebrini's skill set is a little bit more grindy in terms of winning pucks right now against NHL level players. Not that Bedard doesn't do it well, just that Bedard is going to be better at it in a couple of years, whereas Celebrini came into the league with, you know, a little bit of that like Crosby skilled grinder element to his game. Mm-hmm. And that Chicago team, Bedard got one pass in a scoring area all game, and it was on his very first shift, and it was blocked. And it was like the rest of the time, if Bedard was going to create a scoring chance in that game, he was going to need to steal the puck himself and deke out a couple Canucks to get into a scoring area. They have to make it easier for this guy, and that is going to require more skill. Like, he was playing with Colton Dock and Frank Nazar, a couple guys who have, what, a combined 23 games of NHL experience, something like that, right? Like, absolutely no NHL experience.
And then they were like, okay, we got to shift the lines a little bit. Connor Bedard, you're playing with Jason Dickinson.
And right.
It's like, okay, well, yeah, what are we doing?
Because they actually have some, like, Dickinson, McCabe, like, their penalty kill's okay. They actually, like, I think could cobble together an okay bottom six if they were able to bring in, like, multiple top six forwards. Does that sound like another team, you know? And, you know, I think that the truth is, though, is that, like, Vlasic looked good. Pretty interesting young player. I thought Levshunov was really interesting to me. I thought his awareness, his ability to read the game, given that he was playing his, like, fifth NHL game, was really impressive. And I actually liked what he was able to do when he was carrying the puck. I thought he made good decisions as a passer. What I want to see from him, actually, is to be, like, a little bit unreined. Like, I want to see him sort of raise himself in his own decision-making tree as an attacking option, because he has this puck control and this size where he can kind of get anywhere he wants to around the ice. So, you know, you sort of put all those things together and add Spencer Knight in the equation, and it's like, yeah, there's a lot of work to do. I think, you know, another big-time young forward, an established, like, a couple established top six guys, and I think you could be Ginn to Cook in Chicago. But number one thing they need, I think, is a bench boss with a ton of authority, like a ton of authority and a ton of organizational heft, who can help design ways for this team to get Bedard the puck without him having to do it all himself. Because right now, especially on Saturday, I was just like, man, this guy has to do so much to get a touch in a dangerous area, especially against this Canucks team.
And it feels like he suffers from the trying to do too much symptoms,
for
too.
Sure.
Where, especially in the first period, there was a shift where he gave it away, I think, right to Elias Pettersson in the defensive zone. Then he gave it away behind the net as well, both in the same shift.
So he gave it away to Pettersson, and then it went back to the wing, and that was where Hoglander missed the pass to Pettersson. Yeah. That should have been the opening goal.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there were moments like that where I was just like, man, he needs help. And yeah, he probably needs a coach that can be a little more authoritative and help him and the team get to where they want to go. But we get a bunch of texts in. We were talking about, we did the draft with wingers, pending UFA wingers that, hey, maybe you want to see the Canucks sign. Mitch Marner comes in as an option that people would like, obviously, for the Canucks. That's a divided name, though. In terms of Mitch Marner, the one place I've thought of is Chicago, especially because they can't throw money at him. They need top six forwards. Would that make sense? Is that someone that helps them along the way? Or is that, I just don't know. I know Mitch Marner is really good, but I also don't know what he is and what his ultimate, like, what he can provide to a young team like that, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, sorry, so...
So would Mitch Marner be a fit in Chicago is the question.
For sure. That's the team that should 100% fire all weapons to add Mitch Marner. Without question. I mean, you want a perfect fit as a playmaking winger capable of getting scoring centers the puck in scoring areas. I mean, Mitch Marner's the man. He's the man to do it. And he plays the right way, right? Like, and he's good defensively, and he's an elite penalty killer, and... You know, I mean, that would be a game changer for Chicago. That is the real team that should be all in, whatever it takes, to bring Mitch Marner to Chicago, without question.
This text, 650-650 from Lee, in regards to the Canucks, if you cannot get Marner or Ehlers, isn't next year just as doomed in terms of offense for Vancouver?
Oh, man. I mean...
So, I think under this assumption, you're bringing Besser back, and you probably aren't making a substantial add outside of that.
What are you doing with Pugh Suter?
Let's say it's a run it back type of situation. Maybe you add like one middle six winger, center, whatever.
Yeah, I don't love it. Like, I think the truth is that the Canucks are not going to love that either. Like, I don't think that's a particularly likely outcome that they run it back. I think in understanding how we got here, it's important to sort of remember that the Canucks wanted to be a more dynamic rush attacking team, right? They tried to sign Elias Lindholm, and thankfully for them, that fell through. They tried to keep Zadorov. There was definitely a thought to keeping the band back together, at least to a greater extent than the club did. But ultimately, their actions on free agency spoke volumes, right? It was prioritizing speed and scoring on the wings. DeBrusk, Heinen, Sherwood, and Daniel Sprong were like the big unrestricted free agent acquisitions that this club brought in. Well, Sprong didn't work out, and that experiment lasted, what, less than 10 games?
Mm-hmm.
Heinen didn't work out, and that experiment lasted 40 games.
Yeah.
Kiefer Sherwood's been a revelation. Been a really good player for this team. Obviously, Jake DeBrusk has been good.
He's been as advertised. Ebbs and flows throughout a season.
He's been good. Yeah. I think he's been slightly better than advertised. He has capitalized in a really anemic offensive environment at a rate above his career scoring clip. Right? Like,
that's fair.
Given sort of what this team has dealt with offensively and some of the decisions that have had to be made, I think you'd say this has been a very successful first season, and he's probably going to flirt with 50 points and career highs there. He's almost certainly going to set career highs in goals scored. So, I'll defend the DeBrusk performance in year one of that contract for sure. I think he's been really good. So, we come back to it. Team made these changes, and we watched them at training camp, and they're trying to install those landmarks, right? Those anchoring play breakouts, and the emphasis is really on rush attacking, and this club wants to take this quantum leap forward as a rush attacking unit. And then they get into the season, and the Demko injury lasts longer than expected, and Dakota Joshua obviously has a brutal diagnosis in the summer, surgery to repair it, and Besser gets concussed, and then JT Miller leaves the team unexplained for 10 games, and it's very clear that the core is coming apart at the seams, and then Philip Hronek sustains an injury for 6 weeks, and then
Quinn Hughes gets injured as well.
Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson both get knocks right before Christmas, right? Miss some games on the other side of it. And what happens along the road here? Rick Tocchet and the Canucks pull back. Right, this team that entered the season aspiring to evolve this team's identity from a very successful mentality that they carved out last season that was predicated on excellent defensive play and scored a lot, but wasn't built to score a lot necessarily, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had to dial it back. They wanted to evolve. They tried to evolve. It looked like it was working for about 16 games, and then everything started coming apart, and the team's reaction was to try and win 2-1 games, to remove oxygen and flow from the games that they were playing, right? Rick Tocchet had the answer about Eric Brandstrom. Do you remember that in Toronto? Mm-hmm. He had an answer about Eric Brandstrom in Toronto that I think spoke to sort of everything that he sort of had to, basically like decide on in terms of changing how this team played. So, yeah, you know, I just think we've been playing a lot of low event games. We're struggling to score goals, and we feel we've got to stay in the game that way, Tocchet said. I think puck moving defensemen like are important, but you also got to defend. There's a lot of different things. I think Breeze, referring to Guillaume Brisebois, man, this season has been a novel, is a good defender. We've got Hughes right now, and I just think the risk-reward part of it is something we'd rather go this way, but that doesn't mean he won't get in. He never got back in. He was eventually traded. So that's it, right? Like, that's it. This club made a decision, a conscious decision, as everything was falling apart at the seams, to dial it back and try to grind out wins mm-hmm. in a low-event, safe, defensive-minded way. I don't even know if that's the wrong choice, right? Like, if you want to criticize, I think, Tocchet and this team's offensive abilities, I think that's fair. But I think the context of how we got here and the fact that the club's intention was not to get here, was to be something very different than what we're seeing, needs to be like acknowledged and accounted for, right? This is not what the team set out to build. This was the team that the club thought they needed to be in order to gut out wins, given what happened to Elias Pettersson's form, given the departure of JT Miller, given all of the myriad of injuries that they've dealt with, including to both members of their top pair. And yeah, I don't love it. I don't think it's a lot of fun, but I definitely don't think that this team would be better off if they'd spent the last few months playing run and gun hockey either.
Yeah. Because they just don't have the pieces to do that as well, right? Nope. And that's the thing. Do you think they go into the summer with that approach still in mind, the approach they started this season with, wanting to be a team that can create more off the rush and trying to, you know, run, like, not run this back, but run back what they started the season with, ideally with a couple more pieces in the top six that can actually handle that? The one that comes to mind and the one that gets texted in often is Nick Ehlers for me, just because I don't even know. I think there's a lot of hype around Ehlers, and I'm not as high on him as some people are. But that being said, I do think he fits what this team is trying to do a lot more than someone like Brock Besser, I guess. And I, in an ideal world, to be honest, I think you keep Besser and sign Ehlers, but I just don't know how that would work. If I had to choose, and if the option was available, I do feel like someone like Nick Ehlers would go a long way in helping the Canucks get to the point where they can be a team that creates more off the rush. But you need him, and you also need other pieces on top of that. Like, you need another Filipino type center, maybe like hopefully even a little better, to come in and be able to do the same types of things he's doing or was doing before his injury, right? Like, yeah. you need more of these pieces, especially if going into next season you're going to try again at being a team that can create more off the rush.
Yeah, well, you definitely have to try again. You have to recommit, and you need to bring in a lot of talent, and it's not going to be an easy market to identify or bring in that talent, recruit that talent to Vancouver in. That said, you know, I think one strength of this front office has clearly been their sort of value hunting, right? Looking for traits, finding it, right? Identifying some guys like Sherwood, right, who maybe have some untapped offensive upside. I mean, there are routes to building out forward depth, finding fits on the trade market. You know, those have been strengths of this front office, and it's just going to be a massive challenge for them to bring in the right mix, especially given that they need a top two line center, a top six winger. And then I think whatever you need to do to bolster your scoring depth, you know, you probably get more next season out of Dakota Joshua, assuming that he has a fully healthy summer. Right?
He has trended well lately as well. So yeah, it would be, I'm still
holding Dakota Joshua stock, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's fair to make any sweeping conclusions about like that contract or the decision, you know, given what he's dealt with. But I think you get more out of him next season. Garland, we'll see. He becomes extension eligible this summer, right? So that's sort of an interesting situation. Besser, we'll see. Pew Suter, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. So there could be more than just a top six piece or two that this club needs to bring in to make it all work. It might be, you know, more complicated than that, and sort of getting back to a point where you've got real forward depth and speed, real team speed, which I think this team is desperate for, not to mention the Elias Pettersson bounce back, which is obviously the sort of the straw that stirs the drink in terms of determining exactly where this team's offensive ceiling should be put.
Yeah, kind of none of this matters unless we get a full...
none of this matters.
Yeah, ignore all of it unless Pettersson bounces back. Then it's fine. It is Canucks talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Strands. On the other side, we mentioned Hedl. I wanted to get more into what's going on with Filip Hedl and how the Canucks adjust to it as the season goes on. We'll do that next. Canucks talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Strand. Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz. St. Patrick's Day. That's why the Irish music is playing. Two and two together. You put it, and that's what happens. Irish music. Dom producing Arash is picking the music. So if anyone has any issues, blame Arash. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber Text Line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And we are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step.
That sound you just heard was Josh backing the truck over Arash's dead body.
Well, no, I think it's good music. I think it's good choices.
Throwing him under the bus all day.
I'm giving him praise.
I had such a hard weekend, too, and I got to come in on a Monday to one of my best buddies, Josh Elliott Wolf.
Wow.
All it takes is one hosting shift for Josh to be like, you know what?
I got a little too big for my britches.
These producers are beneath me.
Yeah. That is what I came in there and I scolded both of you actually in the break. And I said, never do that again. And then you did it again.
Josh came in and he's like, also, I need guest list plus 10, all guys, best clubs in Vancouver.
Get me Wayne Gretzky on the phone.
Right now. Yeah. That's what I said, and none of it happened. So maybe I don't have the power I thought I held.
Maybe if you wore green today, I'd be more inclined to help you.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I got green shoes. I got a little green on my shirt. On the back, there's a little green, too. You know, I tried. I also have a full green shirt that I just forgot to wear. But as we discovered earlier, if you wear green on camera, you turn into a...
No. It's from just specifically one camera.
Oh, is it only one
yes.
camera? Oh. Okay.
The middle camera.
The middle camera has a green screen?
Taking you behind
screen?
The scenes here at Sportsnet 650. The middle camera has a green screen behind it that we can pull up. And then Josh just dropped something.
I dropped my ring.
And then we can superimpose like a studio background onto it.
That's married under a year, by the way.
Yeah. No, I play with my wedding ring way too often.
Yeah, that'll
You're
stop.
You're lucky I wasn't recording.
I almost lost it in like a movie theater once. It was tough. I found it, though. I found it.
Maybe don't play with your ring.
Dude, it's hard not
it's,
to.
It's, you know, as a fellow wife haver, I will vouch for Josh that it is difficult.
Wife haver, hey?
Yeah, a wife
haver. Well, that's what people call us. You wouldn't know. You're not in the biz. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. Wanted to.
He's in the loneliness
biz.
Are you
single? You don't have a ring on right now.
He's in the loneliness one.
Yeah, he's in the loneliness biz.
I'm seeing a very nice lady right now.
It is Canucks talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Strand.
Where's your ring there, Josh?
Early, it rolled, dude. It rolled so far. It's like it might be over in the.
He lost.
Now.
He lost it in the hole in your heart.
Dom looks so hurt.
As
right
someone
now.
With heart issues, I don't appreciate.
Okay, well you don't have to make it worse.
Oh wow.
You know what? That was a good card to pull.
Like
that was a good card to pull.
It's like when someone makes a your mom joke.
I would
like,
say, I would.
Mom's dead.
Guess what?
It wasn't really a card. It was a cardiac.
Okay.
Arrest?
Thank you for listening to Canucks Talk, everyone. Yeah. That's.
Anyway, that's we're getting a bunch of texts. 656.
What? Did I actually cross the line?
No.
No, okay. No.
Not this time.
It'll happen one day.
Yeah. Like when I tell stories about jaywalking. That really got people fired up.
Did it? Yeah. Were people like aggressively against you?
I got a complaint.
No. I was here for that day.
I got a written angry letter.
What? You got a written letter?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Wait, like someone from the station listened and then sent you a letter.
They weren't from the station, but
no,
they were
it was me, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it might have been Josh.
I'm trying to take him down. We're exposing me. Anyway, I got to get back to Canucks talk because we're getting texts and people are getting upset.
Fair enough.
So anyway, earlier
not
in the show.
Not as upset as your wife after you lose your ring.
She's not listening. It's okay. By the time I get home, I'll find it. Earlier in the show, I mentioned the Filip Hedl situation. So Saturday against the Blackhawks, waning minutes of the game, 5-6 minutes left, gets hit from behind by Jason Dickinson, and
no suspension, by the way, no supplementary
suspension,
discipline.
No hearing.
I'm not surprised. Hedl's body position changed right before the point of contact. It was still a bad hit. Was it penalized in real time?
No.
Yeah, so it should have been a penalty, mm-hmm. but I'm not surprised it didn't amount to supplemental discipline because of that. That's often a factor that mitigates DOPS from suspending.
So Hedl was, in the moment, very visibly frustrated. And it hurts to see. Sucks to see. And we wish him the best. We hope it's not a long-term situation, obviously, for a guy that has history with concussions. Rick Tocchet did say yesterday pregame that he would miss the game last night, obviously did. He did say Hedl felt okay but is in protocol. The team will monitor him over the next couple of days before deciding if he will go on the trip. So I would assume that means he's not playing tomorrow as well, if the decision is about the trip and not about tomorrow's game. But so you're not surprised that Dickinson didn't have a hearing for the hit?
I'm not, no.
Okay. So I did want to play this clip from Kiefer Sherwood last night post-game. He had not been asked about it, had not talked to media, and then Kiefer Sherwood, after the game last night, was asked about the Dickinson on Hedl incident. This is what he had to say.
It's back-to-back games that guys are taking liberties on our guys, and I mean, he's going to have to answer the bell next year because I know we don't play him again, but that was a dirty hit, unnecessary 6-2, and then he doesn't have the whatever to step on the ice afterwards, you know. We had Forby asked him, and it is what it is. You know, we'll get him next year.
So the biggest thing that kind of came from that incident, especially post-game Saturday, was questions about the Canucks' toughness levels and their lack of response, especially in situations like that where a guy gets hurt, obviously is hurt, and there's no response. What I will say about the Canucks on Saturday is Jason Dickinson did not come back on the ice for the remaining 5 minutes after that. It had been a weird, not a weird week. Dickinson had cross-checked Macklin Celebrini in the head in their game against San Jose before. He had to answer for that. I wonder if Blackhawks head coach was just like, you know what, we don't want to have to keep dealing with this, so we're just going to keep him on the bench for the remainder of the game. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't really blame the Canucks for not going after Jason Dickinson in that instance, because there was never an opportunity after that play for them to try to fight him or whatever. What I will say as well is the Canucks were abnormally physical for the remainder of that game after the Dickinson hit. So obviously they were looking for retribution in some way. They were trying to get someone on Chicago to answer. It just happened to be Bedard in a scrum and the first whistle after, I believe, which is probably not what you want if you're the Blackhawks. I don't know why they sent out. They sent out a line of Connor Bedard, Frank Nazar, and Lucas Reichel.
Yeah.
Which was a questionable decision.
Bedard was mugged on multiple occasions.
Yes.
In that game. So, yeah. You know, I mean, look, I think Dickinson should have been penalized 100%. You know, if he was asked, as Sherwood mentions, You know, Dickinson's not got a reputation for being like neither a dirty player nor, you know, the sort of rat who will throw a dirty hit and then not answer the bell. So a little bit surprising to me, all told, just given, you know, what he's been throughout his career. You know, the toughness thing, I think, is real. I think you're seeing it. Like, you're seeing it with who teams dress against the Canucks, right? Like, Liam O'Brien not playing for the Utah Hockey Club, I think, tells you at least something about how Utah, anyway, views this Canucks team, right? As a team that they don't need a deterrent in the lineup against.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing as well that Rick Tocchet mentioned, I think it was pregame Saturday. I forget what day it was, but he did say that would be something they have to address by, like, address in the future. And maybe that's in the offseason, whatever, but he did mention that being a tougher team is something they'll have to address. So yep. Obviously it's something the coaching staff, and I would assume management as well, feels they lack.
Well, not to mention every Sportsnet panelist. I mean, yes. You're watching the game and Kevin BX is going to bring it up, and like, I'm not in the habit of disagreeing with Kevin Bieksa when he's got a take like that. You know what I mean? Like, especially when it's about the Canucks, like, you know, that guy bleeds blue and green, right? Like, yeah. He does. We, you know, it's what makes him, I think, so charming on the panel, is that, you know, Canucks fans, like Leafs fans, have had 8 million broadcasters that have matched that description. It's like, yeah, they call it straight, but they're really a Leafs fan. You know what I mean? Like, BX is the first guy I can remember in my lifetime who did that, or who is that, but for the Canucks, right? And if he's bringing it up, first of all, he knows what he's talking about. But secondly, it's because it, like, annoys him.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's because he feels it.
Definitely.
And so that's an opinion that I weigh really heavily when he's like, hey, I worry that this Canucks team doesn't have enough bite as you know, as they're composed. Like, that's something I take pretty seriously.
650, 650, keep the text coming in. Also, so just on this as well, that's obviously the toughness aspect of it. And, you know, again, we'll see what happens with Filippito over the coming days and weeks, and if he is able to get back into the Canucks lineup. But if he isn't, what does this mean for a team that's already kind of had questionable center depth?
Yeah.
And especially last night, we talked about it in the whiteboard. The speed that was missing in the top six was evident. And that's kind of what Filippito brings. As we've seen it in Vancouver. Obviously, the production hasn't been there as much lately, but the threat of the speed and the ability to get to break into zones differently than the Canucks have been, because everybody else in the top six isn't necessarily as fleet of foot as Filippito is. That's an element they were obviously missing last night. And I'm a little worried about what their center depth is going to look like the rest of the way if they don't have Filippito.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Hedl's been something of a revelation, I think it's fair to say, since arriving in Vancouver, in part because of what his foot speed has brought to the lineup. I mean, it's been an essential component and something that the Canucks hadn't had previously, which has made his contributions all the more noticeable. You know, this is definitely a guy that the Canucks require, you know, for a variety of reasons. One is, and you saw it, right? Like, the knock-on effects from having no Hedl in the lineup is partly like what happens against the Utah fourth line. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Is that as big an edge if you've got Bluger out on the ice all the time against the fourth line, as opposed to, you know, a sort of a shallower overall forward group, which the Canucks are going to be dealing with for as long as Hedl's out. The speed angle, I thought, was wildly noticeable. But that said, I think the Utah Hockey Club is uniquely fast, right? Like, that's a very fast team. That's a team with a lot of team speed. So yeah. I don't know that it's going to hurt you as much against every opponent as it did on Sunday. But certainly, Hedl's speed and the ability to break through neutral zone structure individually, even though I think his decision-making in sort of what they'd call in soccer the final third, right, has been hit and miss.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
You know, his ability to be sort of a driver through the neutral zone as a puck carrier especially, I think has been essential, like an essential add for this team. They're going to miss it dramatically while it's gone.
Definitely. So I also wanted to talk about the defense. So the offense, obviously, for the Canucks, it's been the focal point. It's been the center of attention for a lot of fans. Rightfully so. The Canucks are, aside from that Chicago game, struggling to score goals. And that's been a theme all season. It's probably going to continue to be a theme for the rest of the season. But the defense has been, especially the, like, on an individual level, I wanted to talk specifically about Victor Mancini, because I think in his limited games, especially as he's progressed with the Canucks.
Errors and omissions. Liam O'Brien, his season's over because of an injury. So I take back what I just said.
Okay. That's why they didn't start. Not because the Canucks aren't tough.
My bad.
But because he's injured.
And people call me a Utah Hockey Club fan.
Yeah, you don't even know who's injured. Come on.
My bad.
I did want to talk about Victor Mancini, though. I feel like on the third pair, all of a sudden the Canucks have gone from, like, man, who do you play, to now you almost have too many guys to play on defense, right? Because you want Elias Pettersson to be playing, but Mancini has been playing well. Derek Forbert, we talked about it earlier, to me, has been one of the more underrated Canucks so far this season. I've really liked what Mancini has brought, especially in third pair minutes. You look at some of the underlying numbers, and I haven't checked it after last night's game, so maybe that plays a part, but they were pretty heavily in his favor. And part of that is, like, strength of competition
and
all
that. It's small sample, though. Most of it is actually from that Calgary game,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it's like he's had one really dynamic game, and his sample is small enough that makes everything look really good. So, yeah, the Utah game, not quite as good. Back to 38%.
All right.
Corsi so four.
This is outshot, all falling apart.
Outshot by 13, right? Like, here's the thing about Mancini. I've liked what I've seen, too. The mobility, the size. I think he's got a pretty good head for the game. He's also got a 105.6 PDO and a 98.1 91.1, a 98.1% on ice save percentage, mm-hmm. right? So it's like,
Things are going his way.
We need to wait, you know, because this was the Max Sasson story earlier in the year where everything was going his way. And because of that, like, it's hard to evaluate a defenseman when you've never seen the mistake that ends up in the back of the net.
Mm-hmm.
Because those mistakes might be there. You just don't register them or, like, record them the same way mentally because it results in a save. So it's not that bad. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, you got to wait on a guy like Mancini. That said, I've really liked what I've seen. So I'm not trying to completely railroad what you were saying.
No, it's all good. I do. My main point with this, though, is just that it's nice that, especially when you consider where the Canucks were to start this season, it's nice to have options because that's something they clearly lack to start the year. A lot of it, hey, it's due to robbing Peter to pay Paul. Essentially, when you move JT Miller and that leads to bringing in Marcus Pettersson, that leads to Victor Mancini. But also at the same time, you brought up Elias Pettersson too as another option. That one was internal. It's become a bright spot for the Canucks in what's turned into a season that it's hard to find many bright spots for the Canucks.
Yeah, I mean, this team's defensive play is a meaningful bright spot. They are a very good defensive team. They've performed like a very good defensive team this season. And I think that matters a lot, right? Like, I think that gives them a shot. It's given them a shot to overcome all manner, right, throughout this season of things that have sort of broken against them in a lot of ways, right? Like, this has not been the season by any means that the Canucks envisioned or sort of hoped for. And, you know, I think the fact that they're in it at all at this point in the season is largely a credit to what we've seen from this team in terms of their defensive play. They've actually overcome quite a bit over the course of this year, I'd say. And, you know, that's why they have this baseline from their defensive play that has permitted it. So on the one hand, you know, I think it's fair to say that, like, building out your back end to this extent doubles down on a strength for this team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes sense as a sort of team building philosophy. You want to be balanced. Don't get me wrong. This team does need to upgrade their offensive attack significantly in the offseason. But having a core competence, which the Canucks do, I think, have now in terms of the way they defend as a group, in terms of the structure that they play in to steal, you know, an Alvin Rutherford buzzword, I think matters a lot. It means that if they can keep it up, especially with the composition of their defense corps, especially with the fact that we now believe that they have the personnel to keep it up, and the goaltending, too, especially if you get Demko, a healthier version of Demko, either down the stretch at some point this year or next year, this team could be a beast from a goal prevention standpoint. And what does that mean in terms of their offensive production? What it means is you don't have to get to, like, top 10,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't have to be a top 10 offensive team. You can be a pretty dangerous opponent if you're 15th, if you're 18th, if you're 20th even.
Yeah.
Right.
The issue is they're really low right now.
Well, what you can't be is 30th in terms of your shot rate, in terms of the rate at which you generate scoring chances. But still, the floor is high enough that the club doesn't have to climb as high. Like when we talk about who do they upgrade, you know, and it's still a star-driven league. It's still a 4-3 league. It's still a 900 save percentage league. You need to be able to score if you're going to win meaningfully, especially once you get past the first round. But at the very least, I do think there's the core reason that this team has managed to stick around and is still favored to be the team that makes the playoffs in the West. The defensive play, the penalty kill has been elite, right? Like they're a good defensive unit, and that at least makes the hill that they have to climb offensively an awful lot less steep this summer.
I did want to get this in. The most optimistic text of the day goes to Ty David. Says, hey, the bright side is that Canucks management raised the team's floor. Now they're a wild card contender, even though everything has gone wrong this season. When it all clicks like last year, they are legit cup threats.
Well, sure, but it doesn't always click like it did last year. That was historic, right?
Last year was very fortuitous. But
Hronek, Hughes, Garland, Miller, Pettersson, Besser were all available for all 82 games.
Yeah, I mean,
that alone is wild, right? Mm-hmm. The team shot at a historic clip. They also had elite goaltending, right? They won a ton of games without their starter after he got injured.
Mm-hmm.
And they drew the Nashville Predators in the first round.
Yeah. A lot went right last year.
The Edmonton Oilers had like an 8.850 save percentage when they took them to seven games.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they have raised the floor of this team for sure. But the question is, can you actually get to where this city wants this team to go without also raising the ceiling?
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, and it's like it's a pretty sharp contrast. Like one thing that I think the Panthers can be said to have done, for example, in assembling their team was they kept finding moves that raised the ceiling of the group, including, you know, Huberto and Uyghur for Tkachuk, right? But other moves as well. At some point, you need to have a top end if you're going to be one of 32, which is damn difficult to do as you look around and watch the Avalanche play and the Stars play and the amount of talent that some of these groups have. And at this point, you know, I sort of look at this Canucks lineup, I look at their cap resources, their draft picks, what they have coming. And it's just like, how do you get there?
Yeah. It's a tough hill to climb, and we can get more into that as the week goes on, as the month goes on, all of that. But Ty David, I appreciate your optimism. Good job. Way to keep it rosy after a tough loss.
But happy St. Paddy's Day nonetheless.
Anyway, there's Thomas Jantz. Appreciate him. Thank you to Dom. Thank you to Arash producing in studio. Producer Lena working from home, happy birthday. Also, happy St. Patrick's Day. I've been Josh Elliott Wolf. Thank you to everyone texting in and listening. This has been Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.
Josh just dropped something.
I dropped my ring.
For the time will soon come when hobbits will shape the fortunes of all.